alarm outside headquarters of Silicon Valley Bank in Santa Clara, California today.
They just came out and told us that the bank is shut down.
SVB, the 16th largest bank in the U.S. with $175 billion in deposits, is now the biggest American bank to fail since the 2008 financial crisis. Earlier this week, SVB disclosed it took a loss on the sale of bonds due to rising interest rates and announced it would sell shares to shore up its balance sheet. Its stock price plunged and customers rushed to take their money out. The FDIC now stepping in, telling customers they will be able to access funds by Monday, but the guaranteed amount per depositor, $250,000.
A heart-stopping moment of this bank is done.
Ashley Trunier is the CEO of healthcare startup Farmbox Rx. Unable to access her money today, she fears she could be out more than $10 million.
$250,000 isn't a ton of money to us when you're talking of eight figures that's in the bank currently.
Concern over today's collapse of SVB drove Wall Street lower. The banking sector alone down more than 4%. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
There are recent developments that concern a few banks that I'm monitoring very carefully.
The immediate concern? The cash-burning startups who have millions in SVB and may not be able to access the money they need to pay bills or make payroll.
Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. So Silicon Valley Bank has now collapsed. It's gone. It's been taken over by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And this is the second bank in the USA to have collapsed in the last week. And the big question that I want to investigate in this video is whether or not the events of the last few days are specific to these two banks. Are these isolated incidents that will have absolutely no impact on the rest of the financial sector? Or is this a black swan event? Are we starting to see a collapse in the banking sector caused by the rapid increase in interest rates that spread all across the world over the last 12 months? So in today's video, we'll have a look at exactly why Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate Bank have collapsed, what the implications of these failures and the loss of confidence will be for the financial sector. Silicon Valley Bank is actually the second largest banking failure in US history. So we'll have a look at the list of largest failures and talk about how significant Silicon Valley Bank is in the general scheme of things. I'll talk about the FDIC scheme, which guarantees the return of $250,000 for all depositors. And we'll talk about that in the context of Silicon Valley Bank, how relevant it is to the customers and how much is uninsured of their portfolio. We'll then go on to look at the events of the global financial crisis. How quickly did the banking collapse happen in 2008? Was it within a matter of days or weeks or months? Because that will be relevant here to work out exactly how long the impact of the failure of these two banks is going to take to feed through in the financial system. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think the implications of the failure of these two banks will be over the course of the next 3 to 6 months, and whether or not I think this is the start of a new global financial crisis. So why did Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate Bank both fail? Well, the main reason that both banks failed was that they had too much money. Now, that seems counterintuitive because when you think of banks failing, you think about them lending large amounts of money to corporates who then get themselves into difficulty, are unable to repay, and that means that the bank doesn't get its money back and then goes into some sort of financial crisis. That's what people traditionally think about when they think about bank failure. But actually, the vast majority of the reasons why banks fail is due to poor management and poor decision making. Now, both Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate position themselves as specialists. Silicon Valley Bank was created to service the venture capital community. Venture capital has grown to be an enormous market. The sector has raised hundreds of billions of dollars, and that money is invested into exciting new companies. Large amounts of cash are given by the funds to these new companies, and that has to be put somewhere. And Silicon Valley Bank benefited from that. These companies placed all of the cash on deposit with them, and that resulted in the bank having a large amount of cash. And Silvergate Bank performed a similar function for the crypto markets. It was targeting all of the crypto corporates, companies like Coinbase. Coinbase was taking large amounts of dollars off all of those customers, and it then gave all of those dollars over to Silvergate, and so Silvergate also built up large cash reserves. Now, in traditional banking, when a bank takes in a deposit from a customer, it will then lend all of that money out to other corporates to make its returns. It will charge significantly higher rates of interest on the loans than it pays to depositors and therefore makes a healthy profit in between. And the logic behind that business model is that that profit will cover any potential corporate failures. Now, the problem that both Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate Capital had was that their customers were not looking to borrow money. They were actually cash rich. They were giving over the cash to the banks. And so they didn't have enough customers to be able to loan out all of the money. So they needed to come up with another way of making a return on all of that capital. In those sorts of circumstances, banks often turn to the bond markets. But the problem that both of these banks had is that over the course of the last few years, the COVID pandemic caused interest rates to drop to virtually zero all across the world. And that meant that the yields available in the market were very, very low. However, in the absence of any other options, both banks decided to invest heavily into the bond markets. And the best available yields in the market were on long-term bonds. So both banks put the money that they'd taken in short-term deposits into long-term investments. Now, over the course of the last 12 months, we have seen a rapid increase in interest rates all across the world. And in the USA, interest rates have risen from around 0.25% to 4.75%, which represents one of the most rapid increases in US history. And as the price of bonds has an inverse relationship to interest rates, the value of all of the long-term bonds that both banks had invested into has fallen dramatically over the course of the last year. Now, these circumstances wouldn't have represented a major problem for either bank if their customers didn't need their money back. But there have been major problems in both the crypto markets and the tech sector over the course of the last 6 months. As a direct result of both the slowdown in the global economy and also the increase in interest rates, investors have become nervous about technology, and technology businesses have started to see a reduction in their valuation and also a fall in their markets. And as a result of that, the technology companies that bank with Silicon Valley Bank started needing to withdraw their money. And the situation in the crypto markets over the last 6 months has been even worse. Since the collapse of FTX back in November, we've seen the valuation of cryptocurrency falling dramatically. And this has put huge pressure on a lot of the crypto corporates who then needed to withdraw their money from Silvergate Bank. So the fall in both of these markets resulted in the customers of both banks needing to withdraw their cash. And because the banks had invested into long-term assets, their liquidity ratios started to fall. Now, initially, the customers of both banks were unaware of this liquidity problem. However, when Silvergate announced its results for Q4 2022, they revealed that they'd incurred a loss of over $1 billion by having to sell long-term bonds to fund the deposits. And that caused panic and led to a liquidity crisis and the failure of that bank. And in the world of finance, when one company fails, it causes nervousness across the whole sector. And for whatever reason, depositors at Silicon Valley Bank then started asking for their money back, and we saw a run on that bank which led to its collapse. So that explains exactly what's happened at both of those banks. But the big question now is, could this spread to other institutions? The whole world of banking and finance is based upon trust. When you hand over your life savings to your bank, you trust that institution to look after those savings and to be able to give it back to you as and when you need it. Now, as we discussed earlier in the video, banks do not just put your money into a safe and wait for you to turn up to take it back out. They actually use your money to make profit, either by lending it out to other people or corporates, or by investing it into the capital markets. And there are two fundamental risks with that business model. The first risk is that they make losses on their investments, that they don't get back enough money and therefore don't have enough capital to be able to repay everybody. And the second risk relates to liquidity, because at any one moment in time, it's impossible for the bank to be able to repay everybody simultaneously because all of the assets are tied up in longer term investments. So in order to answer the question as to whether or not the collapse of these two banks could spread across the whole sector, we need to look at what's happened to the value of all of the investments and what the likelihood is of a run on other institutions. Now, in terms of the value of all of the investments that banks have been making over the last few years, there is a big question mark right now. As you'll be aware if you follow the channel, over the course of the last 6 months, the global economy has seen two major events. The first is the rapid increase in interest rates all across the world. And the second is the slowdown of the global economy. The outlook for the global economy is now significantly worse since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As we've just discussed, banks make a return on depositors' money either by putting that money into the capital market, so bonds or equities, or lending it directly to corporates. Now, in terms of the value of bonds and equities, we've seen a significant fall over the last 6 months. We talked about what's happened with bond prices. That was a contributing factor to the downfall of both Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate. But we've also seen a fall in equities over the last 6 months because the outlook is now negative. So that means a fall in the returns that the banks have been making. And potentially some of these investments are now significantly underwater in the same way as they were for both of the banks that we're talking about. And in terms of the risk on corporate lending, that's also increased because the global economy is slowing down. That's putting pressure on a lot of companies, and it's likely that we will see an increase in corporate failures. So in terms of the capital that the banks have deployed, there has definitely been a downgrade in terms of the valuation and an increase in the risk. But by far the biggest risk facing all financial institutions right now is a run on their assets. If customers suddenly get nervous and they lose confidence in a particular name, then we will see people wanting to remove their money, and virtually every bank in the world will be unable to return all of its customers' deposits overnight because of the fact that they've invested that money into a variety of different loans and assets. And the panic that spreads amongst customers as part of a bank run is exactly what brought down Silicon Valley Bank. And that means that there is now a very real risk that we could see this happening to multiple other financial institutions over the course of the next few weeks and months. All it really takes is a negative press report or a statement made by a high-profile individual naming a particular institution, and that institution will then come under pressure. And as people start to withdraw their money, the snowball starts to gather pace, and that's when that institution could find itself in a liquidity crisis and potentially facing collapse. A lot of viewers have posted comments stating that Silicon Valley Bank is irrelevant, they've never heard of it, it won't have any impact at all on the financial markets, and that really everybody is sensationalizing this story just to create some news. However, whether you like it or not, Silicon Valley Bank is relevant and it will have an impact on the global financial markets. It's actually the second largest banking failure in US history. The largest was Washington Mutual back in 2008 at the start of the global financial crisis, which had assets of $307 billion. Now, at the end of Q4 2022, Silicon Valley Bank actually had total client funds of $342 billion. However, because of the run on all of their assets, at the time of the collapse, the assets had actually fallen to $209 billion. But $209 billion makes it significant. When you look at the rest of the banks on this list, the next largest was Continental Illinois National Bank and Trust, which had assets of $40 billion. Fourth on the list is First Republic Bank, which had assets of $32.5 billion. And fifth was IndyMac, which had assets of $32 billion. So whichever way you look at it, Silicon Valley Bank is large. It's meaningful, but the biggest impact, I think, in terms of what's happening right now is the loss of confidence in the sector. If this was an isolated incident and Silicon Valley Bank had no relationship with any other company or business, then you may say that it wouldn't have any impact. However, the fact that it's the second bank in the same week that's failed in the USA, and it has links to all of these tech businesses. A lot of businesses have all of their money on deposit at Silicon Valley Bank, and they are going to lose the vast majority of that. So thousands of tech businesses that have tens of millions of dollars on deposit are now facing financial ruin. And of course, those companies are employing lots of people and they have relationships with lots of other businesses. So there is a huge interconnectivity here. So Silicon Valley Bank has relationships with other financial institutions. So you've got that link. You've then got the link through all of the tech businesses. And then the biggest issue is the loss of confidence in finance. When people read about a bank failing, it causes nervousness, it causes people and companies to start thinking about where they've got their money, whether or not it's safe, whether they should withdraw all of their funds. And if that then starts happening with other institutions, we could see a real domino effect here. We could see a lot of other banks failing. So Silicon Valley Bank is definitely relevant, it's definitely important, and as the second largest banking failure in US history, it definitely will have an impact on the financial markets. So you may be thinking that the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation have taken over Silicon Valley Bank, so there shouldn't be a problem. Well, that absolutely would be true. Well, that absolutely would be true if all of the customers of Silicon Valley Bank only had $250,000 on deposit, because that amount is guaranteed by the FDIC, so everybody that has an account with Silicon Valley Bank will eventually get that money back. But unfortunately for the customers of SVB, the vast majority of them had significantly more than $250,000 on deposit. In fact, 89% of the bank's $175 billion in cash deposits as at the end of 2022 were completely uninsured. So that means that the customers of Silicon Valley Bank have over $155 billion of uninsured deposits. So potentially all of that could be lost. And when you think about $155 billion spread across all of these technology businesses, that is tens of thousands of companies who've lost all of their money. These are potentially companies that were doing really well. They were doing so well that they were actually putting large amounts of cash on deposit at the bank, all of the money that they were generating. That's been wiped out. So if you put that into the context of your personal circumstances, that would be like you losing 89% of your net worth overnight. That is a catastrophic event for everybody involved. And that's why there's panic within the sector. That's why all these companies are now worried about how they're going to pay their bills, how they're going to pay their employees, whether or not they're still solvent, or if they now have to go into liquidation. And if they go into liquidation, obviously that has a knock-on impact to all of the companies that they deal with. But even the money that's insured by the FDIC may not become available immediately. So if companies need cash overnight, they may be struggling to access that cash. And so we could see liquidity crises cropping up with tens of thousands of businesses over the course of the next few weeks. And this is only likely to fuel the panic in the sector further and lead to more companies thinking about withdrawing all of their money from other institutions. So it's very possible that we could see runs popping up at various institutions over the course of the next few weeks. So if the failure of these two banks does cause contagion in the sector, if we start to see a collapse of the financial system, how quickly will it take effect? Well, in order to answer that question, I thought it was worth looking at what happened during the global financial crisis, which was the biggest collapse in the financial markets that we've seen over the course of the last 50 years. Now, in terms of the landmark events, one of the first big failures in the USA was investment bank Bear Stearns, which found itself on the brink of collapse in March 2008. However, it was actually bailed out following an acquisition by JP Morgan on the 14th of March 2008. Now, in terms of the knock-on impact of that failure, the next biggest event was actually in September 2008. So a full 6 months later, when the US government bailed out mortgage lenders Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, a week or so later, on the 15th of September, the most famous event of the global financial market was the failure of Lehman Brothers, which filed for bankruptcy with assets of around $600 billion. Now, the failure of Lehman Brothers did trigger a full financial collapse all around the world, and we saw multiple governments having to step in and underwrite their banking sectors and bail out various financial institutions. However, it took a very long time for everything to feed through in the financial system. In 2008, 25 banks failed in the USA. In 2009, another 140 banks failed in the USA. In 2010, a further 157 banks failed. In 2011, another 92 banks failed. And in 2012, a further 51 banks failed. So the ripple impact of the global financial markets took a long time to feed through. And if we put that into the context of what's happening now, this chart shows the number of bank failures dating back to 2014. And you can see that since 2018, there's only been a handful of cases. And over the course of the last 3 years, the only official failure that we've seen is Silicon Valley Bank. Silvergate Bank is closing, but it's going through a voluntary liquidation, so won't register on this chart as a collapse. So it will be very interesting to see what happens over the course of the next 12 to 18 months, whether or not we start to see a rapid increase in the number of bank failures. And if we do, as we've seen from the global financial crisis, this won't be a short-term impact. If we start to see banks failing, it's likely that it could last for a number of years. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video really to establish exactly what the reasons for the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and Silvergate Bank were, and then to look into whether or not there was a risk that other financial institutions could experience the same problems, and whether this could escalate into a wider global financial crisis. And what we've established today is that there were two main drivers for the failure of these banks. The first relates to what's happened to interest rates over the course of the last 3 years. During the COVID pandemic, we saw interest rates fall to their lowest levels in history, and that obviously had a direct impact to the yield that was being offered on bonds. Now, over the course of the last 12 months, we've seen a complete reversal of that situation. Interest rates have risen rapidly, and that's forced down the price of bonds. And the problem for both of these banks is that they'd put a lot of their capital into bonds, which are now out of the money. So the movement in interest rates exposed both of these banks to risk. And the reason that risk was capitalized was because there was a run on customer deposits. The customers of both of these banks became worried about the viability of the bank and therefore tried to withdraw all of their deposits. And as word started to spread, those withdrawals became a run, and that caused a liquidity crisis at both banks and ultimately led to their demise. So the big question is, will this have a knock-on impact for the financial markets? And the answer is that it's highly likely that other institutions are going to experience the same problems, because any bank that's been investing in the capital markets over the course of the last 3 years is likely to have exposure to these bonds and therefore will be out of the money. And if those banks are then put under financial pressure because there's a run on withdrawals, they will be forced to sell those bonds at a loss. They will then publish that loss. The announcement of that loss will then lead to a further drop in confidence amongst all of the customers, which will then lead to more withdrawals, causing the bank to sell even more assets at a loss. And that's exactly how these institutions find themselves in a liquidity crisis. But the risks to the financial markets are actually worse than that, because as we discussed earlier in the video, over $150 billion worth of cash that Silicon Valley Bank was holding is uninsured and therefore at risk. And if all of those tech companies that were holding large deposits with the bank lose that money, that puts the viability of those companies in question. And if those companies go down or are just simply unable to pay any of their creditors, then that means there will be a knock-on impact throughout the whole of the technology sector. And the sector is already on its knees because we've seen falling valuations, falling sales, and falling projections for all of the tech markets. So the overall summary of today's video is that the failure of these two banks has raised the risk of a wider financial crash and has now got a lot of people thinking about the viability of their bank, thinking about making withdrawals. So that has materially increased the chance of another bank run striking at some point in the near future. But over and above that risk, we've also got a wider deterioration in the global markets. The global economy is slowing down. And the continued increase in interest rates is putting a lot of investments that financial institutions have made over the last few years further out of the money and therefore exposing them to liquidity risks if they have to sell those assets. So the likelihood of this situation accelerating into a wider global financial crisis is rising by the day. And it's getting more and more likely that we will see further failures in the financial sector over the course of the next few weeks. So as always, I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments. If you've liked today's video, then please give me a thumbs up. And thank you so much for watching this video all the way through to the end. And for everyone that is still watching, here's a special reward video.